Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left for today's very special episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than Kent County Cricket Club rising star, Tawanda Muyeye. So Tawanda, first things first, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's a pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket and cricket in general. I must ask, how's your day been so far, mate?
Thank you for the introduction, and I'm really happy to be on the podcast. My day's been good. Quite an early start. We went for a 5K run as a team. And obviously, pre-season started this week, so it's quite good to be back with the lads. So yeah, my day is basically done now. So yeah, quite good to get it out the way early.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can't say I can relate, to be honest, to Wanda. I haven't exactly been on a 5K run this morning. Probably a five-step walk down the stairs to come down and do the podcast, but I can't say a 5K run. Maybe that's why I'm not a county cricketer and you are. But yeah, that's for another podcast. But in terms of today's episode, just for our listeners out there, both old and new, basically today's episode with Tawanda is going to be discussing his earliest cricketing memories in Zimbabwe. Then we're going to talk about county cricket with a massive focus on Kent County Cricket Club itself. And then, given the reaction on Twitter to Wanda to our announcements, we have got quite a few fan questions. So, yeah, just letting you know in advance about that, we have got quite a few to wrap up today's podcast. But before we get into all of that good stuff then, Tawanda, I want to take you all the way back to the origins of the Tawanda Muyeye cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
Probably watching my brother and my cousin play in the backyard. So when my brother was learning to play cricket, I was probably quite young. He was probably 10 and I was 4-ish. So that was like the first time I ever encountered cricket. And then when I was probably around 5 years old, my cousin left us and my brother kind of just would use me as like his throwdown machine, and maybe I'd get a bat at the end, but it was more of a bullying kind of thing. Me throwing balls to my brother. And yeah, that's just basically how my cricketing journey started.
Well, it's a lovely journey into the game. I must admit, very family orientated in terms of those formative years. And I have to ask, because I've read the article on The Telegraph, am I correct in thinking that some of your earliest memories in the game involve tape ball?
Yes, we used to do tape ball, tennis ball, so it swings a bit. And then we used to use like a roll-on ball. So like, you know, in antiperspirants, one of those little balls that rolls. So we used to break that thing and then get the little ball. And it's quite bouncy. It's quite cool, actually. So we'd have a mini cricket bat, play on our knees, and we'd use that little ball. It's a bit strange, but yeah, that's what we used to do sometimes.
It's not, I think that's quite inventive, to be honest. And tape ball is fantastic. It really is. For those of you who haven't played tape ball, it does swing a lot, doesn't it? It's incredibly hard to hit. As a batsman.
At my young age, I had no chance against my brother because he was a left-hander as well and he was 6 years older than me. So I literally had no chance at all, ever.
A walking wicket against the table.
Basically, just because he used to just get to bat all day. And yeah.
Sounds fun, that, to be honest. At the age of 4, facing a tape ball from your 10-year-old brother. I can't say I'd fancy that, to be honest, at that age. But in terms of those early years then, Tawanda, who in the world of cricket itself did you look up to? Who were your role models? Who were your icons? Did you try and emulate anyone in those formative years, per se?
When I was like probably like 5, 6, we used to watch a lot of South Africa. So I used to like Graham Smith, Jack Callis. Yeah, those kind of guys. Ashwell Prince. And I used to like Michael Clark quite a lot. And then as I got older, it was more Kevin Peterson, I think, who stood out for me. But yeah, and then I Zimbabwe team, I liked a guy called Charles Coventry. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
194, he scored in a match. Yeah.
Yes. That was the game. I literally, after that innings, I remember going into the garden with my brother and I was literally slog sweeping all afternoon over the house. It was so fun. And Brendan Taylor as well. And Tatenda Taibu.
That's unbelievable. Tatenda Taibu.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I've never had the opportunity to talk about him here on the podcast. He is one of the most underrated cricketers of all time, in my opinion. Great wicketkeeper, handy batsman, Zimbabwe's youngest ever test captain as well. And funnily enough, upstairs, I have his signature. I have the Tete Taibu signature. I never get to talk about this. This is why I was really looking forward to today's episode, to be honest, Tawanda, so we can actually talk a little bit about Zimbabwe cricket in general. But Tatenda Taibu, yeah, absolute legend of the Chevrons. Really, really good player. And Brendan Taylor, of course, came here and played for Nottinghamshire in county cricket. So, yeah, some good idols in there. And I have to ask, because you've alluded to the likes of Kevin Peterson as well. I also saw in the Telegraph article and on Kent's website as well, Viv Richards, an absolute legend of the game, had so much flair, elegance, panache and style. I have to ask about your batting technique, because when I've watched you for Eastbourne and Kent this season, I must admit you've got a wonderful sense of flair and elegance, in particular with the wrist work, the bottom hand. So my question with regards to your technique, has that always been an asset of your game, that heavy, dominant bottom hand, or is that something which you've learned over the years, per se?
I think it's probably just been a natural thing to me. I remember being maybe 10 or 11 and some coaches like trying to change the way I held the bat. And then again, when I was 13 or 14, but like, I just never ever used to listen. So I'll change it for like a few balls and I was like, this is a bit weird. And then I just kind of just stuck with it. And ever since then, just been the same, I think, probably since I was started playing cricket. So it's probably just been the same since then.
Yeah, fair enough. As I said, it does make it look very, well, as I said, elegant, very majestic when the shots actually come off. There are some fantastic shots, in particular against Essex and Middlesex this season, which really stand out, and from your Eastbourne days as well, which we'll get into in due course. And just before we get into our discussion about the more professional aspect, schools cricket, and the journey to the UK as well, I feel like that's going to be a massive point of today's conversation. We also have to talk a little bit about off-spin. In terms of the art form, why did you become an off-spinner?
It's actually quite controversial. So we were playing, I was probably like 12, and we were playing a day and night competition in Zimbabwe. So we traveled to the school and we played a few group games during the day. And during one of those group games, like, I don't know, I felt like this, I won't name his name, but I felt like the umpire, because we played this team quite a few times and like they always had something against me, or I felt that way. And my coach felt that way. And I used to be a seamer. So I was like, obviously it was a must-win game for them. And I was probably quite fast at that age. And literally mid-over, he like starts calling me for no balls for throwing. It was a bit strange, but I don't know. So he called it like two or three times. And then he said, nah, he has to bowl spin. So I bowled spin and I did quite well with it. So I just stuck with it since then, basically. But I did used to love bowling seam. But obviously it was a bit controversial that happened. But we won the game. So it was nice to at least win the game. But yeah, that's just basically why I started bowling spin.
I must admit, I don't think we've had that one here on the podcast so far. You got called for throwing when bowling seam. How on earth does that work? Were you going for some Lasith Malinga style ones?
Nah, I was just like a normal traditional seam bowler. Swung it a bit, bowled a bit fast. To be fair, because I was quite big for my age at the time when I was 12. So I could bowl like decent pace for that age. So I don't know. Wasn't a fan. Wasn't a fan really.
Clearly, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, as I said, it's quite a unique journey into the world of off-spin. And I have to ask, ahead of 2022, we didn't see it in 2021, but can we expect to see some Tawanda Muyeye off-spin?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely one of my work-ons in the winter. I did bowl 7 or 8 overs this year in the 50-over comp, and it was against Gloucestershire. And literally, we probably, I don't know how many runs we'd scored, but I think I bowled my 7 overs and literally went for like 16 runs. I nicked Chris Dent off when he was on about 40 or 50. And Steve-O, unfortunately, it was quite a hard catch and he put it down. But I did bowl okay. And I think I figured that I could actually bowl at this level. So I think it's definitely something I want to work on in the winter.
Fantastic. Well, that puts a nice smile on my face as an off-spinner. Obviously not as talented, otherwise I've been county cricket, but I do love off-spin. And again, Tawanda, you're lucky. You're lucky you're not a specialist off-spinner. or else I'd be chatting your ear off, to be honest, about the art of off-spin. I find it absolutely fascinating. Same with batting as well, to be fair. Obviously, I can't bat. My batting average in village cricket is 11. And let's be honest, a lot of those aren't coming off the middle, mostly edges. Like, you should see the edge of my Kodiak Bear blade. My goodness, it's absolutely red. It's just full of cherries. But no, I always find it fascinating. And as I said, that is quite an interesting journey into the game. It really is. And so far, obviously, the majority of the conversation has centred around Zimbabwe, to wonder. But how did the move to England, if you're okay with actually speaking about this, if you're comfortable, if not, that's absolutely fine. But how did that move from Zimbabwe to the UK actually come about in the first place?
It's a long story, obviously, but I'll try to explain it to the best of my abilities. But basically, my mum left Zimbabwe abruptly, when I was probably like 15. But I didn't know why, and no one really knew why. Well, my dad knew, but my sister and I kind of didn't know. But my brother was already here for university. And then I obviously got a scholarship after not being picked for the Under-19 World Cup when I was probably 16. Well, I was in the squad, but I just didn't travel. And then I got a scholarship to Eastbourne, and obviously I took it. Saw my mum, and she kind of explained why. So she was a refugee, and with her being a refugee, it kind of was unsafe for me to go back to Zimbabwe. But I did go back a few times, like during school holidays and stuff, but it was always like on edge kind of thing, just naturally, just because of what my mum did or what happened to my mum. And then we just kind of like had to leave eventually in the end, just because, well, it was just like when you walk around, you just kind of had your looking over your shoulder kind of thing. But like, obviously, I don't feel like anything would have, I don't know if anything would have happened to us, but obviously my mum was quite big in like politics. So it just wasn't safe for us in the end. So we just moved over here.
It's a shame, isn't it? It really is. The whole situation in Zimbabwe, let's be honest, for years as well.
It's quite sad. Like, obviously, there's a lot of human rights violations that go on in Zimbabwe, which is quite sad because it has so much potential as a country. And the people are so amazing. But yeah, I don't know. Just quite sad, really. But anyway.
It is incredibly sad because, as you rightfully said, I've had the pleasure. I mean, and yourself, Tuanda, you're included very much in this as well. I've met some wonderful people from Zimbabwe. I really have, both in a cricketing and outside of a cricketing capacity. It's a very, very vibrant country. And the people who enjoy cricket there absolutely love this game. They love it with all of their heart. And it really is disappointing. It's saddening. To be honest, I'd go as far as say heartbreaking, to be honest. What's happened to Zimbabwe, well, let's face it, since the late 90s, early 2000s, in particular with cricket as well. We've seen the death of the test team as well. They're not exactly, you know, competing in World Cups like they used to anymore. They didn't even get to compete in this year's T20 World Cup. There's a lot of internal issues with regards to Zimbabwean cricket as well. And something which I don't think many people actually know, with regards to England and Zimbabwe, we last played each other in a test series in 2004, I believe it was, or 2003. We haven't actually played each other in a cricket game, at least in an ICC tournament or a bilateral series, since 2007. And that is because we aren't allowed. I don't think many people actually know that. England and Zimbabwe are not allowed to play. We're not allowed to tour there due to government advice. So it's a massive shame. And considering the brilliant Zimbabwean cricketers that we've had in county cricket, the likes of Murray Goodwin, the Flower brothers, Brendan Taylor, who we've mentioned already, more recently, Blessing Rajabarni himself, Tuanda, I do hope that one day that bridge can be fixed and we can play Zimbabwe again, because it's a wonderful cricketing nation. I know people have been on safari to Zimbabwe as well and say it's a wonderful country with lovely people. But yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, one day that situation can be resolved and our two countries can play cricket again.
Yeah, definitely. It's a beautiful place, beautiful people. So yeah, hopefully things will fix themselves at some stage.
Absolutely. Yeah, we can but hope. But fingers crossed that day will come sooner rather than later, because I know a lot of people as well who'd love to tour, you know, see Harare, Bulawayo, Kwekwe as well. There are some wonderful hidden gems in Zimbabwe itself. So, yeah, hopefully one day, And if we do, I'd absolutely love to see us play the Chevrons, because I do like Zimbabwean cricket, if you can't tell already, listeners. But yeah. In terms of your experiences in those early years, I suppose, in the UK as well, Tawanda, what were your first impressions of the country, I suppose? Because it is a different culture from Zimbabwe. There are a lot of differences between our two countries. What were your first impressions of the UK?
Cold.
Yes.
I remember jumping out of the plane, and it was in April. And that was obviously meant to be like kind of sort of the start of the summer. And I was just like, wow, this place is freezing. And I obviously didn't have enough clothing on, because I just come from Africa, so I was quite light on the clothing. And I was literally like, oh my word, this is so cold. But in terms of the culture and the people, obviously it was quite different. Like coming to private school here, it was literally a whole different ballgame to private school in Zimbabwe. Everyone's different. But yeah, I never ever felt like out of place. Never kind of was made to feel like I was foreign when I was at school, kind of, just because everyone was quite nice to me and treated me quite well. And obviously, Rob Foley and Treddy were my coaches there. They were really good with me. So I never really struggled to fit in, I would say.
Well, that is wonderful to hear. It really is. And I'm glad you mentioned the temperature, because I say that to a lot of our South African, Australian guests as well. I imagine it does hit home pretty quickly, the difference in temperature, because you've come from, what, 30, 40 degrees at times. You come to the UK and all of a sudden it's -4. You need a scarf, you need a coat. It's horribly cold. There might be a bit of snow around as well. I can imagine it's quite a rude awakening, to be honest, because you don't realise until you experience it.
Yeah. Like I'd obviously never been to England. Well, I came to England when I was like a baby, but I'd never fully experienced like England. Like, we'd never come here on a holiday or anything. So it was literally just straight away chucked in the deep end in terms of the weather. So, yeah.
Yeah, I imagine it's not the nicest of feelings, to be honest. But in terms of those early years at Eastbourne then, I say we talk about your school days, Tawanda, because let's face it, you had a pretty memorable time down in Eastbourne, to say the least, winning the school's Cricketer of the Year as well in 2020. You had a prolific season as well, scoring 1,100 runs for the Sussex-based college. In retrospect, how would you describe your experiences at Eastbourne College? And I suppose the follow-up to that would be, how important has that time been in terms of your cricketing journey?
Cricket at Eastbourne was like probably the best cricket I ever like got to experience, like just in terms of the balance, like school, cricket, and all of that kind of thing. I really enjoyed it. It was enjoyable. The coaches probably made it so much better for me. Like, a lot of time was invested, not only in me, but because the team I played for, probably 6 of us now are pros or something ridiculous, like out of 11 of us. So I enjoyed my time down there. It was really good. And if I hadn't gone to Eastbourne, I probably wouldn't have been a professional cricketer, if I'm being honest. Because I feel like I was a decent cricketer, but I think there is when I learned to like work hard and get the best out of myself in terms of mentally, physically. Emotionally, it was quite a struggle, just because I, at the time, probably 16, 17, 18, I used to beat myself up. Like, if I didn't score a lot of runs or if I was going through bad form, I probably still do it a bit now. But I did learn quite a lot about cricket and myself at Eastbourne, and probably tried to get the best out of myself all the time, whether I was training, whether I was doing yoga, whether I was doing ballet, whether I was in the gym. It was just those kinds of things that like I was exposed to. It was quite a good experience, and I enjoyed my time there. But probably without Rob Furley and Treddy, I don't know where I'd probably be cricketing-wise without them in the 2 or 3 years I spent there.
Well, it's funny you mentioned those two, Rob Furley and James Treadwell. Both former county cricketers, James Treadwell as well, represented England in World Cups and Test cricket as well. How pivotal of a role did those two play in terms of developing your cricketing journey? Because from what I've seen and heard and read in various media sources, it seems as though those two were absolutely integral to your success.
They were massive, to be fair. And it's quite nice because they still care about me quite a lot. Like, I'm probably going to see them this Saturday, which is quite cool. But obviously, being able to have them, they've experienced quite a lot in county cricket. Obviously, had their two different routes and their two different roads. But they were probably really big in my development, and the time they probably sacrificed for me was massive, to be fair. Like Treddy, there'd be times when I'd have sessions with Treddy late on a Friday, and he'd drive, because he lives in Folkestone as well, so all around Folkestone, and he'd drive me back home as well with him. So like, it's things like that, small things, which are quite like helpful, because I'd be coming from boarding school, I'll be tired from my cricket, instead of jumping on a train, he'd just like offer to take me home, which is quite nice. So yeah, it's quite cool.
It is. Yeah, it is pretty cool, I must admit. And two excellent role models, I have to say, and two excellent influences to have in those formative, well, I suppose this is talking about your professional years now, in those early professional years. And I have to ask, because James Shredwell, a bit of a titan down in Kent, was excellent for the South Eastern County. I suppose we have to talk about Kent County Cricket Club, to be honest, Tawanda, because that is your team. And congratulations, by the way, first of all, for the contract as well. Be fantastic to see you for many years in the county circuit. But how did that move materialise in the first place? Why did you choose Kent? Because from what I've heard, there was quite a bit of interest for your signature.
So I'll go back to basically the start, I think. So last year, I finished school abruptly, obviously, because of COVID. And in... So I was a bit stuck. So I was either going to go to Loughborough as an international student, or I was going to be able to play professional cricket, just depending. Just because we had applied for our refugee kind of status, so last year when the whole COVID thing happened, that's when we applied, basically. And I was kind of stuck because it just depended on the status, really, whether I could play professional cricket or whether I'd be classified as an overseas or what. So there was quite a lot going on. So I went and worked. No, actually, before I went and worked, in September last year, there was like an intra-squad game for the Kent team. So I think they organized that to end the season, and I was invited to play that. Kent got in touch with Rob Furley, and they just said, I'll go and play this game. So it wasn't anything serious. It was just kind of the academy kind of interest for a game. And I played in that, and I did okay. Probably got like a 60-odd, and I don't know how I got out in the end, but probably got like 60-odd. And literally after that, I spoke to Paul Downton just a bit, got to know him, and he got to know me. And it was kind of like we clicked kind of straight away, and we got on. It was a good conversation, free-flowing. Wasn't awkward, wasn't very hard. So that was cool. And then I went and worked at the prep school next door, Eastbourne. So it's called St. Andrews. So it's like the feeder school to Eastbourne. And I was obviously like quite stressed. I was stuck. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And obviously that's where Treddy and Rob again played quite a big role. Where they allowed me to train. So I'd left Eastbourne, but they'd like make some time for me to come and train because I still wanted to be a pro. So they'd obviously, I'd do my gym in the morning, then in the evenings or in the middle of like lessons, Rob would like slot me in to come and like train. It was a bit awkward though, because like obviously I'd left Eastbourne and I would see a lot of faces that I saw, and it was just a weird experience for me, and I found it very strange, but I got through it in the end. And then literally in October-ish, Kent were like, oh, you want to sign me if you are going to be based in England? And then I was like, oh, cool. That's fine then. And Sussex obviously also came in. And then I went a bit to Notts, which I really enjoyed. I like Notts, actually. It was cool. And then obviously with Kent, there's a lot of stuff that was done in the background, and I liked the place. I liked the team. It was really close to home. And yeah, just decided to choose Kent. And I love the chat, to be fair. I'm enjoying it quite a lot. So yeah, being a young guy, I think Kent's probably the best decision.
Absolutely. And it's certainly paid off. And I know the Kent faithful absolutely love you as well, Tawanda, because you are one of the hottest prospects in county cricket right now. I think that's pretty obvious, having looked at the social media reaction as well to our announcement. And as I said, we'll get onto those fan questions in due course, because I couldn't believe how many there were. There were loads. There genuinely were loads. So we'll have to get through those at some point. But before we talk about this season and your time at Kent so far, I just want to take it back slightly, because you alluded to it there while you still had that asylum seeker status. And I just wanted to ask, this was also one of the questions actually from Tom Pearson. Thank you for getting this question in, Tom. But what was life in the UK like as an asylum seeker? I know this isn't cricket orientated, but I'm intrigued by this as well. What was that experience like for you?
It's been a positive experience. I'd be lying if I said otherwise. And I've never really felt like an outsider. And being young, I'm just enjoying life, being happy and being comfortable. I'm happy that my family settled here and we're all happy and we're comfortable. And we just get to live our lives normally. So for me, it's just being grateful that that's okay. My mum's happy, so that's what matters.
Well, Tawanda, that is lovely to hear. It really is. It's fantastic to hear. And I'm glad that yourself and your family are settling in so well. As I said, we've not heard the last of Tawanda Muyeye in county cricket. I think you've got a very, very bright future and a very big ceiling. And I read in that article from The Telegraph about the moment that you got your citizenship status confirmed. And if I just read the quotes, I have to read this quote about a cake from Waitrose. I'm not sure if you remember this, Tawanda, but in terms of the quote itself, it says, I was on the train when I got the phone call. I couldn't even cry. I was just really excited and very, very relieved. My mum cried. She also got my favourite cake from Waitrose. So I have to ask, Tawanda, what was the cake?
It's literally just like a plain sponge cake. It's literally the best thing ever. When I first joined Kent, I would have like a cheat day. So normally on a Friday, and I would get this sponge cake, and I got Nathan, because I live with Nathan Gilchrist, I got him some of that stuff, and he literally loves it as well. But we've had to stop that now because it was getting a bit out of hand. hopefully during the season we can kind of have a lot of stuff that we want, so hopefully we can start having that again, but not during the season.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. I must admit, I love that. I really did love that quote. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And talking of Kent then, let's go on to the main focus of today's podcast, which is, of course, the South Eastern County. What do you remember from your debut for the Spitfires? What do you remember from that day? And I suppose I have to follow up with, how momentous of an occasion was that for you personally?
My debut was tough. I found it quite tough just because obviously I was a Sussex boy, and I signed here in April, and literally in that February, I was in the nets at Sussex, potentially going to sign there. So for me, going back with all my friends there, so basically all my cricketing journey was basically all at Sussex in England. I did a bit of stuff at the academy there. So a lot of the people there I knew. And it was kind of like a full circle moment. So like the first county net I ever had was at the nets in Sussex with Yards. And obviously, my first class debut, we were back in those nets, Yards and I, and it was just like, oh, remember Yards when I first came to England and he threw balls to me and what. And so, yeah, for me, I enjoyed it, but it was very tough and I wanted it to be over as quick as possible just because it was just a weird, weird experience. I don't know, it was just strange, but I loved it. Unfortunately, Ollie Robb, he's really good bowler. He got me out pretty cheaply. But yeah, it was an interesting experience. And obviously the rain played a part that week. So it was just I'd probably describe it as a strange but good experience, yeah.
Fair enough, Tawanda. And I have to ask, I always ask this to our guests on the podcast, do you remember the exact scores from that debut and the amount of balls?
I would say first innings, I think it was probably one off like five or six. I think I faced my second ball, first ball from George Garton, clipped it to fine leg. And then I was on the other end and probably faced like two or three balls from Ollie Robinson. He hit me on the pad, I think. First ball he hit me on the pad, second ball, I played and missed. Third ball, hit me on the pad. And then fourth ball, hit me on the pad, and I was out. So, yeah. And then second innings, I was 12, not out. But, like, the game had died, I think, because of the rain. So, it was ended up as a draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took the not out.
The red inker.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, spot on. One from 8 and 12, not out from 30, including your first boundary as well. How satisfying was that to score your first boundary in county cricket?
I literally thought I'd hit it. I think Ollie Robinson was at deep, or hovering deep mid-wicket. I literally thought I hit it down his throat, so it was quite nice to see it go. A bit of a rack shot, to be fair, but I don't know.
Hey, they all count. They all count. Doesn't say that on the scorecard, does it? It just says a boundary. So, yeah, that is the perks of being a batsman, I suppose. And in terms of that debut to Wander, this actually might be a tough question, to be fair, because you had quite a memorable first season down in the southeast. But would you say that was your favourite moment from your time with Kent so far? Or is there another moment? Maybe you made him, you made him 50. Does that top it, or another moment per se?
I think definitely the last game of the season was probably my favourite and most memorable, just because I don't know if we're going to speak about the season much, but
we are.
We can speak about it. But throughout a lot of things that happened during the season, I think for me at the end there, it was quite important, and it was quite a satisfying game as a whole, because as a team, we had struggled in four-day cricket, but to come back and win the last four or five championship games that we had was pretty cool. So yeah, I'd probably say the last game was my favourite.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because we have to talk about it. And again, some of the shots, as I alluded to right at the start of the podcast, the dominant bottom hand, some of the shots you're playing against the Middlesex bowlers were absolutely sublime. That's the only way that I can describe them. There probably are more words, actually, to be honest, but the English language fails me at this moment. Maybe superb, splendid, resplendent. There we go. Any other words used to describe those shots. But in terms of that final game, as you alluded to, in the season, Kent got off to a really rough start in Group 3, finishing, you know, second bottom only to Sussex, and then going in consequently into Division 3 come the divisional round. I have to ask, how important of a moment was that for you, getting that maiden first-class 50? And that partnership with Ollie Robinson, I suppose we have to talk about that as well. That was a brilliant partnership. But given all that had gone on with Kent's Red Bull season in particular, how important of a knock was that for you personally?
It was probably massive. It was really big. Because until then, I'd felt like my season had offered so much promise, but like I just never quite took it deep enough or far enough with my innings. So to be able to play in innings like that and kind of show the coaches what I can do was quite important to me, because it's probably going to put me in a better place. Because this year was the first time I ever played multi-day cricket ever in my life. So I'd probably say before my debut, I played 2 4-day games for the twos. And I had to, obviously, due to injury, I had to go up to the first team. So to be able to end the season like that and play a proper 4-day knock was quite special and important to me. And batting with Ollie Robb was quite good, because obviously him and I get on quite well. We open in the 50-over stuff together, and every single time we played in the 50-overs, we'd start the game and say, let's be brilliant, and one of us would get out quite cheaply. I think we only had like one or two 50 partnerships out of the 8 games we played, so to come at the end there and actually be brilliant together was pretty cool. It was quite nice. And yeah, I enjoyed batting with him. And I get on with him really well, so yeah.
I must admit, he's a lovely bloke. We've had him. He was actually one of our earlier guests on the podcast. We're now, my goodness, I think we're about 130 episodes in now. That says it all, to be honest, with regards to our podcast. I think Ollie Robb was maybe in the 60s or 50s, I think, with regards to our episodes. But yeah, wonderful, wonderful guy, and an excellent batsman as well. I remember in 2019, it was on my birthday, actually, at Edgbaston, and he scored a century. And Kent beat my beloved Warwickshire at Edgbaston on my birthday. So thanks for that, Ollie Robb. I'll never, ever forget that. But no, he's a brilliant, brilliant guy, excellent cricketer. And it was a wonderful partnership. It really, really was. As I said, a great way to end the season as well for Kent, winning at finals day, which I will ask about in 1 second, actually, to Wander. Just that experience for you personally. But after having such a rough start and everyone on social media was just rinsing that hashtag, weren't they? Hashtag Super Kent. Whenever Kent were losing a game and there's all that fallout, I suppose, from Group 3. To win Division 3 and Finals Day, lifting that first T20 Blast trophy in 14 years was quite something special. And I did allude to it there, Finals Day, to Wander, because although you didn't play in it, you were there at Edgbaston, the fortress, as we know it here in the Midlands. What was that like for you personally? Have you ever experienced anything like that before?
Never, ever in my life. And I don't know, for me, I wasn't going to go that day because I was meant to go on a holiday with my mum and my siblings, just because I was a bit burnt out with the season. So she had planned that. And then obviously everyone got tickets, so I was probably not going to go. And then my mum got ill. I don't know, she didn't have COVID, but she just had like a fever kind of thing. So she kind of just binned it off. And then I'd obviously given my ticket away to one of the boys. And then luckily I got one back. So I ended up going up and I was sitting in the crowd and watching. So we got there probably just as the Sussex game started. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's do this. And then I went and sat down and I remember watching the Sussex game and I was just like, wow, like, it was pretty cool. And obviously it made me, like, I think by the end of the season, I was kind of like, oh, I just want the season to kind of end. But I kind of just fell in love with cricket again that day and was just kind of like, oh, this is actually quite cool. I'd want to be involved in this one day. And to see the boys perform like that was like pretty special. It's so special to witness because I think from the moment I got there, I just like had such a good feeling about it. And I was so glad that, I mean, obviously my mom got ill, but I was quite glad that I ended up coming. So that was nice. So it was pretty cool to watch that, to be honest.
It was a wonderful finals day. It was my first ever one, actually. I was sat in the west stand. It's to the left of the big south stand at Edgbaston, where the media centre is. And I have to ask, Tawanda, did you get recognised by anyone in the crowd?
I don't know. I actually don't know, to be fair. Maybe like one or two, but nah, not really. Nah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Hey, if things go well in the future, you'll be appearing in one if Kent do get to another one. So we'll have to wait and see.
I do hope that we, some point in my career, we do go to another finals day or a couple of finals days whilst I'm here. So, yeah.
They are fantastic. And when we get players on the podcast, for those who haven't played for England, they always say finals day is one of the highlights of your career because you've got 25,000 people in. The atmosphere is electric at Edgbaston. You're never going to have a silent or flat atmosphere at the fortress, but it's a massive, massive occasion. And they do mean the world to win the T20 Blast. It really does. And yeah, Kent, the defending champions, that'll be interesting to see if the Spitfires can defend their crown in 2022. And Tawanda, would you be wanting to be a part of that team in 2022? Is T20 as a format on your radar necessarily?
Yes, definitely. I guess it was quite hard to break into the team this year when everyone is literally firing at all cylinders every single game. I don't know how many games played, maybe 14, and literally every single game everyone turned up. So that was pretty cool. But I do hope we carry on playing well. But I don't know. We don't know what happened in the future. But I do hope to, at some point, make my T20 debut and be part of the T20 team as well.
Well, fingers crossed, Tawanda, that dream can be realised. Who knows, 2022? We'll have to wait and see. All I will say, hopefully, my beloved Bears don't play the Spitfires again. That was not a nice trip down to Canterbury. That's all I'll say. Ended up, how many overs did we? I think we missed about 7 overs as well. Got stuck in a load of traffic on the way down to Canterbury. Got there late. Then the Kent fans started giving it all large because Sam Billings was scoring runs of fun. And then, yeah, my beloved Bears did fall short. But, hey, congratulations to the Spitfires. They outplayed us on that night. And then if you are going to lose to anyone, at least let it be the champions. So we'll let that slide, to be honest. But fingers crossed, 2022, my beloved Bears can get their revenge and make finals day. But so, Andrew, in terms of 2021, then, before we get into future aspirations and our plethora of fan questions, I have to ask, in your own words, how would you go about describing the 2021 season?
Tough.
Why is that? If I could just follow up.
it was tough because I had literally gone from not knowing whether I could be a professional cricketer in England to being a professional cricketer. And then I hadn't played cricket for maybe 18 months because my last school season was cut short and I hadn't played a lot of cricket. So I literally went from not playing any cricket at all to literally being a professional cricketer overnight, kind of. So obviously my last memories of cricket were from school, and it was good. Things went well. And then I came to Kent, obviously. First few games, I did okay. I was going on an upward curve, and then suddenly, like, boom, professional cricket has its struggles. I had to do a lot of figuring out about myself. A lot of discipline had to be instilled. Just because as a young cricketer, I think you just kind of like, oh, take on the world, whatever. And coming from school cricketers, I was probably going to be a lot more fearless than ever and just a bit rash, a bit brash. So that's basically what happened. I'd have a few good innings, but somehow I'd always find a way to like get out. And it's so unforgiving, professional cricket. So you can't get away with a lot. So you have to be so precise, so disciplined. So those are the kind of the routes I went through at the start. A lot of learning about myself, learning about my own game, obviously not having played a lot of four-day cricket. And that was the majority of cricket I was playing because I wasn't really playing the T20 stuff. And then I played the 50-over stuff, which was okay. I got good starts, but I never quite pushed through. So like I would have a good start, get out the power play on like 25 or 30-odd and literally just get out. So that was quite tough to take. I think I'd probably describe it as tough. I learned a lot, but I think it was worth it. And I definitely probably needed to go through failure and that discipline element of things, because I think obviously in the last game, it started to show that I was kind of learning something, and I'd learned over the season what to do, what not to do, which shots to play, the discipline element of it, how to manage a passage of play. So it was things like that I had to learn, and I had to learn the hard way, sadly. But I'm happy it happened, looking back on the season, because in life, obviously, you don't want everything to be given to you, because if I'd come in and literally smash the world apart, and then I'm 23 or something, and I go through a rough patch, you wouldn't know how to react. But I think having that happen early on and being able to like say, you know what, I'm 20 years old, there's still a long way to go. You've had that learning experience. Obviously, there still will be hard times to come, but to have that early definitely humbled me. It definitely put me in a good place, hopefully for next season, to just be more calm, just relax. And obviously, it was my first professional season, and I felt like at school, I was probably quite an intense person. So now I've learned a bit more about myself, like just when to relax, when to switch off, when to switch on, what kind of things I need to do before a game, what things I shouldn't do before a game. So things like that I had to learn again, obviously. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to 2022 and seeing what that has in store. But yeah, I'll say big learning curve this year. So I've enjoyed it. I think looking back on it, it was really worth it. I was around some really good guys in the team. Obviously, they're senior players. Zach was really good with me this year. Joe Denny was really good with me. DBD was really good. Steve was really good as well. So it was a good group of senior players around who I could learn off. And they have obviously had their hard seasons and stuff. So they're always there to help and pick me up when I needed it. So yeah, I'm glad it happened, to be fair.
Well, Tawanda, I must admit, for a 20-year-old, that's a very, very mature outlook on cricket. And in terms of your cricketing journey as well, because as a batsman in particular, you have to understand this, and you have to understand this incredibly early on. You're going to fail more times than you succeed, because you're going to get an absolute nut now and again. You're going to get a jaffer which castles you. It's going to, you know, nick off the edge. You're going to get out for some low scores as well if you go aggressive. That's just how the game plays out. But it's about maintaining that even keel and understanding that, because if you notice, you said there, about learning from your failures. In this podcast, we haven't discussed anything about those failures. Have you noticed that? You have not been characterized by your failures. You've been characterized by the 89 from your maiden first class 50. That is what you have to understand as a batsman. You're going to have low scores. It's going to happen. Bowlers are going to have their day, and you're also going to have your day as well. And it's all about that learning process. And if you can learn that quickly and early on in your career, you're going to be really, really well set. You're going to have a solid foundation to succeed, not just in the county game, but potentially the international game beyond as well. And down in Kent, as you rightfully said to Wanda, you've got some fantastic influences. Zach Crawley, for example, playing with England, had that 267 against Pakistan. You can learn and sponge information off of him. Same with Joe Denley. You've got Darren Stevens, the GOAT. You've got the GOAT in the same dressing room. And we'll talk about Steve-O when we come to the fan questions. There are so many fantastic influences. And to Andy, if I was to give you any advice, to be honest, you can take this or you can't, right? It's up to you. But just learn as much as you can. Because as you rightfully said, you're 20 years old. You've got years in this game. You've got absolutely years. You've got the fundamentals absolutely nailed on. If you keep on learning and keep on putting these little extra things into practice as your journey progresses, you're going to go far. And that's just my advice for you personally.
Yeah, I think definitely also being able, as a young cricketer or young sportsman or young person in general in life, I think being able to put your ego aside, because obviously the world is your oyster as a 20-year-old. You just left home. You literally want to take on the world on your own and stuff. So just being able to say, you know what, just chill out, like listen to Walks when he's speaking, or listen to Yards when he's speaking, or listen to Deej when he's speaking. Like, it's just little things like that, which, if I want to be successful cricketer, I have to listen, I have to learn, and take in as much information as I can. And I hope after this first season that I've had, I've learned some stuff, and I look forward to learning more stuff during the winter and again during the season next year, because obviously there'll be times when I'll fail, times hopefully when I do well. So yeah, just being able to manage my ego as well is just important. Like I didn't mention Yards. He was really good with me this year. He's been a fantastic batting coach to me. And he's always like been there, because I think there was times when I came unstuck with the batting and I was batting well in the nets, but in the match I'd have a good start and not do well. But like, he was always positive about it and say, oh, it'll come. So yeah, I've enjoyed working with him, and he's been brilliant, to be fair. I didn't mention him, but yeah.
He was an excellent cricketer as well, Michael Yardie, for Sussex and for England as well. Brilliant, brilliant cricketer, really good all-rounder. I used to enjoy watching him, to be honest, so it must be quite cool actually having him almost as a mentor, not just as a coach as well, but someone, again, to learn off of. And that is the key thing for young cricketers. But Tawanda, I think that is actually a perfect place to pick up our fan questions, because a lot of these are from the Kent faithful. So there is going to be some Kent bias in here, listeners, just to let you know in advance. But our first one is from a long-term listener of the podcast, Quinty J, JR on Twitter. And you've already mentioned this guy in the Kent dressing room, and that is, of course, Joe Denley. And before I actually ask this question to Wanda, are you aware of the Denley meme team? Are you aware of that in the dressing room?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
I've not been told about that, actually, or not heard about it yet.
Well, you're in for a treat. Ask Joe about this. Ask Joe about... Joe Denley has his own meme team on Twitter, and they're absolutely fantastic. They're brilliant. Great, great laugh. And there was actually a video on Kent's Twitter account of Joe Denley signing his own memes. So, yeah. If you don't know about...
I would love to see Joe do that, because he actually just probably just laughs so much.
He loves it, apparently, to be fair. Yeah. According to the Denley meme team and people at Kent.
Yeah, I feel like you'll find that really funny.
In fact, Amanda, I've got a question as well before we get into the fan questions. Apologies, JR. We will ask this eventually. But what about a Muyeye meme team? Would you be in favour of that?
To be fair, I'm all for it. As long as it's positive and makes people happy and makes them laugh, I'm for it.
Well, there you go, Kent fans. That's a new meme team to produce heading into the 2022 season and beyond. We look forward to seeing that on Twitter. But
I don't know if there's enough photos of me on the internet, though.
Yeah, but as I said to Andy, you've still got a number of years. We can build it up. You can build up the reserves as the years go by. Yeah. So there we go. But in terms of the origin of that whole question from JR, the question itself was, how much of an inspiration has Joe Denley been to you so far, Tawanda? How important of a role has he played in that dressing room?
Yeah, he's been really good with me, to be fair. Gives good advice, and he's just quite a good guy in the dressing room. He's always positive, never has anything bad to say to anyone. I've enjoyed being in the same dressing room as him. Obviously, he was playing for England like not too long ago, so I obviously watched him play on TV and stuff. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, he's a great guy, and I enjoy. I sit opposite him, so I see him quite a lot.
That must be quite cool. You probably just made the entire Denley meme seem very envious there when you say you sit across from from his Denliness, as we call him on Twitter. But yeah, he seems like a great guy, Joe Denley. Would love to have him on the podcast one day. So Joe, if you're listening, get yourself on TCCP. That's what I'd say. But talking of Kent as well, this is from Liam Knight, who I'm guessing you're very familiar with, Tawanda, down at Kent. And he says, the Cuban or chemistry, which place is better?
That's so classic, Liam. to be fair, I'll be honest, I'm more of a London boy. I like going into London and spending time in London. But if I had to choose between the two of them, I would have to say chemistry. And this is going to upset Liam. I'm going to have to say chemistry because I like my R&B and hip-hop music. So they've got a floor, an R&B and hip-hop floor, which is middle floor. So I'm going to have to go with chemistry there.
Well, there you go, Liam. I must admit that put a smile on my face when he put that down in the fan. Well, say the fan questions. He works for Kent. But yeah, that was quite a good one, I must admit, Liam. Keep them coming in whenever we have the Kent boys on. Moving on to our next one. Again, this is another one about Kent. This is from Tom at Kennort. The question from Tom is, who's the best fielder at Kent, in your opinion?
Heino Kuhn, definitely. And, well, obviously now Heino's left. I'd probably say Jordan Cox. He is unbelievable, to be fair.
Yeah. I would agree with that. If not for anything else, that's incredible piece of boundary work at finals day.
He's pretty impressive, to be fair. Mm. So shout out to you, Jordan.
Yeah, he won the award, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair play to him. Deserved as well. I must admit, he's an absolute greyhound in the field. Really, really quick. Attacks the ball as well. Again, just some advice for any fielders out there. Attack the ball. Don't just allow the ball to come to you. Attack the ball. Get that ball in as quickly as you can, and that will suit you well.
He's a very natural fielder as well.
Well, I suppose that might come from his keeping as well, mightn't it?
I think so, yeah. He's definitely more natural. Like he works hard on it, but he doesn't have to work as hard as in like the rest of us.
How's your fielding coming along, Tawanda?
It's all right. It was pretty poor at the beginning of the season, though. I dropped like so many catches. But I mean, partly because of the cold weather and partly just because I was just poor. No composure at the start, but it's getting better now. Don't worry.
Well, when we see it, you know, pull off some absolute spectacular catches next season, we know why. The root of it was this conversation. So moving on to, oh, in fact, there are some really good ones in it. I must admit, can I just say as well, to all of you who got these questions in, fantastic. Thank you for these. There really are some very good ones. This next one is from Rob Rush. Now, Rob's a very, very prominent voice on cricket Twitter, I must admit, in particular, county cricket Twitter. And Rob said, if you could sit down with any cricketer from any time frame, dead or alive, for a three-hour chat to Wanda, who'd you pick and why?
I'd have to go with two people. Probably Viv Richards. Just because I like the way he speaks. and also, he was just like a really good cricketer. Just because he was fearless as well. Just played his own way. Never let anyone ruffle feathers kind of thing. And I'll probably say Kevin Peterson as well, just because he's just so good. And I want to learn how to play his flamingo shot. If you could give me a three-hour tutorial, I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, that'd be quite useful, to be fair. What a shot that was, the KP flamingo. We don't really see that often now, do we?
Not really, no. Maybe, I don't know who plays it, potentially.
Steve now. Smith? Now and
maybe
again?
Ben Maxwell? I don't know. Now we don't see that much, to be fair. Not anymore.
To wait, to be fair to Wanda, you need to bring it back. Hashtag bring back the flamingo. That's what I say, 2022. Keep on watching those KP tutorials and watching that old footage.
If I'm batting over 150, maybe, yes.
Oh, brilliant. But I've got a tough question, actually, to follow that up with. Right, you can only choose one. You can only choose one. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Tawanda. Right, you've got a net session, a two-hour-long net session with one of those two players in their prime. Who are you selecting and why?
So, probably Kevin Pearson. Just because I feel like I'm quite bottom-handed like he was. So, I think I'll probably get a lot out of that session than I would probably Phil Richards. But, yeah.
Let's be honest, you can't really go wrong with either, can you?
That's true.
Yeah. Exactly. Fair enough, though. KP, in the one in a billion chance that Kevin Pearson is listening to the Counts Cricket podcast, there we go. That would put a smile on his face, I guarantee. Moving on to our next one, then. This is from a boy. Now, I know a boy from Cricket Fanatics magazine, a boy, a very, very knowledgeable cricket fan. And I thought this was a wonderful question. I must admit, a little bit outside of the box, but to wonder if there was a biopic based around your life, which actor would you want to play the role of yourself?
Which actor? Wow. Michael B. Jordan.
Ooh, shout. That's a good shout. Fair play.
Maybe.
No, I like that. I like that answer. He was good in Creed, I must admit. He's a good actor. Also, for those of you out there who remember him on NBA 2K, that was an absolute classic. I like that choice personally. I don't know who I'd go with. Not that anyone would want to make a biopic, to be honest, on the cricket connoisseur, but yeah, I'd struggle to answer that, to be honest. Maybe Mark Labette from The Chase. I think that's my celebrity lookalike as well. So yeah, we'll go with Mark from The Chase. Moving on to our next one then. This is also from Tom Pearson. Again, someone who I alluded to beforehand. This is going to be a tough question because we mentioned a lot of coaches, a lot of names in that Kent dressing room. But in terms of your county cricket journey so far, if you could just choose one, or might be leaning to make it two, who do you say has been your biggest support to Wanda in terms of your journey so far?
Like in the dressing room?
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably say Daniel Baldrummond and Yards, I'd say. In terms of cricketing stuff, I'll probably say those two.
Two excellent choices.
I have to say Mark Dicker as well. I'm sorry, that's three. Those two have been quite big.
Hey, it's fine. It's fine. That's a good thing, actually. You've got quite a vast support network in county cricket. Again, always a nice thing to have. This is also our last one from Tom for today's episode. But this is quite interesting, actually, because I think actually we might have contributed to this. As of the boys at Cricket District, just a shout out to Toby, Jack, Freggers and all the boys at Cricket District. But how do you deal with the hype surrounding your cricket, to wonder? How do you maintain that level-headedness in the game?
Like, obviously, it's nice and stuff. People thinking that I'm a decent cricketer. But like, I also have to remember that I'm 20 years old and I've achieved nothing in the game. That's just what it is. That's the truth of the matter. Like, I did well at school, okay. I did well in one game this season, but there's still a long way to go, and I've achieved nothing, essentially, to be honest, with myself and with everyone. I've achieved nothing, and working hard is probably going to get me to where I want to be. So that's just how I put it, to be honest, plain and simple.
Hey, you say plain and simple, but simple but effective. That's how I describe that personally. Again, it's just maintaining that grounding. It's very important because, I mean, as a lot of us know, 19, 20, 21-year-olds, sometimes, we alluded to it beforehand, with the world being your oyster, the ego does get a little bit inflated. So, it's important to maintain that level-headedness, shall we say, especially in these formative years. The next one to wonder, this is from Oli Arango. I'm not sure if this guy's name will be familiar to you, but I'm guessing it is. He says, I'd love to know how much of his swashbuckling style with the blade and gentlemanly panache on the circuits he ascribes to the formative years he spent playing for the Flashman Cricket Club.
Oh, my gosh. A lot of it. To be fair, the Flashmen, I played for the Flashmen when I was in quite a hard place, to be fair, and they were really good with me. So it was just like it's like a wandering club. So I just played a couple games for them. So it was pretty cool. Met a few people there. So yeah, it was during that period where I was kind of confused whether I was going to be a uni student or a professional cricketer. So I enjoyed my time with them. So yeah, they played their role.
So shout out to the Flashmen. That's what we'll say. Never thought I'd say that on the podcast, but here we are. The joys of the Counter Cricket podcast, folks. But so, Amanda, moving on to our penultimate question, before the question which came up the most, actually, with regards to our fan questions. But Darren Stevens, I can't believe I didn't ask this earlier, to be honest, but what were your first impressions of Darren Stevens? What was your immediate reaction to meeting the GOAT of county cricket?
Obviously, I'd like known like what he'd done and stuff. And I remember we were at pre-season in Merton Taylors and he was bowling to me. So it was the first time I ever faced him. I hadn't spoken to him yet. And I literally like walked down at him in the nets. Just being a 20-year-old, obviously, that's not played on a green seamer before. I walked at him and like tried to like hit him. I don't know what happened in the end, but like that was my first kind of encounter with him. But like he's cool. He's a cool guy. He's so relaxed. Like probably the nice, like one of the best people to learn from, like, especially as a young player, because he also had his different entry into cricket. He probably maybe like 20, 21 when he became professional. So to be able to speak to him about his kind of journey, because mine is quite different, to be fair, to a lot of people. So to be able to get that perspective of different people's paths is quite cool. And yeah, he's so relaxed and he's just himself really all the time, just relaxed and chilled out.
Yeah, I imagine it must be quite a nice presence to have in the dressing room, having the GOAT of county cricket. He is a legend, and we always say this on the podcast, but hashtag Darren Stevens for England. I'm just saying, one game, all I ask for, one test match with Darren Stevens, I don't care where it's played, I will make the journey for that. I will travel to the ends of the earth to watch Darren Stevens. New Zealand, if it's in Wellington or Christchurch, I'm there. I'm booking the flight. Darren Stevens for England, make it happen, Chris Silverwood. That's all I'll say. I'd pay good money to watch that because he deserves it. He's an absolute legend here in the county circuit. And to end up talking of England, this is the last of our fan questions before we wrap up today's podcast. But is England your choice of international team? I'm guessing it is. But in terms of if you do make it to the international stage, would it be England that you'd select?
Probably. Well, it's my adopted home now, I guess. But if the opportunity arises, if I work hard enough and I'm offered that opportunity to play for England and play Test cricket for England, I'd probably want that. But that's probably a goal for me. I obviously have a few years to be able to like qualify for that. But during those years, obviously hard work and just trying to be the best version of myself as a cricketer. Hopefully that can happen, but no pressure really. I'm still young, so it'll be nice, but it's quite a far goal, I guess. It's like just at the back of my mind, I'd say.
So fair enough to wonder.
Stuff I need to sort out before that.
Well, there is, but again, if we come back to it, the topic of today's podcast, I suppose, which is time. You got plenty of time, you got plenty of things to learn, and to be honest, to wonder, just personally speaking, I imagine I speak for quite a few people here, it would be incredible to see you play for England. It really would. As I said, I want to see that flair, the style, the panache, the majesty of that bottom hand in action in an England shirt. I think it'd be absolutely amazing, to be honest. And obviously wishing you the best in that regard. And I think that takes us nicely onto our final question of the podcast before we say our goodbyes on what's been a fascinating podcast. I must admit, I've really enjoyed it today. But in terms of your future aspirations, Tawanda, what do you want to achieve in the immediate future? Let's say 2022 and beyond for Kent. And from a personal perspective, what are your future aspirations in the game of cricket itself?
I used to be very goal-orientated, to be honest, but I have tried to stop setting like too many goals just because of expectations and stuff. But I think to be able to contribute to as many Kent wins as possible, to obviously score 100 for Kent. That's probably one of my most, my biggest goal at the moment. It's just, and to just have fun, I think, because there was times this year when I didn't quite have so much fun because I was so focused on trying to get to the first team or trying to, you know, just, yeah, just enjoy it, I think. Because when I did enjoy it, I did well. And when I tried too hard or tried to do things out of my own character, it just didn't work out. So just to just chill out, have fun. When I'm asked to do something or I'm asked to play this game, just do it to the best of my ability. So, yeah, just to be a consistent performer for Kent when I play or when I'm provided the chance. But definitely being a regular in the teams, both T20 and the 4-day stuff would be quite cool. And maybe potentially one day playing the 100, that would be quite cool as well. But yeah, not a lot of pressure on myself anymore. I'm just having fun, I think. That's the most important thing.
It certainly is, Tawanda. And I tell you what, it goes without saying, but obviously wishing you nothing but the very best of luck in the next steps in your journey. In 2022 for Kent and beyond, who knows, international honours may beckon one day. And I'll look back on this podcast with a lot of pride and say, you know what, I got to interview Tawanda Muyeye at 20 years of age and look at him now. But Tawanda, honestly, wishing yourself and Kent nothing but the very best of luck heading into 2022 and beyond. And also just thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. You really have been an excellent guest on today's podcast. So much insight, so much knowledge as well about the game of cricket. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on here for a chat. So before we say our goodbyes to Wanda, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, I have nothing to promote. But yeah, I've really enjoyed being on the podcast and speaking to you. It's just pretty cool. I heard you spoke to James Logan last week. Apparently he said I'm the worst dressed. That's a lie because he asked me for dressing and fashion advice like every other day. So he was obviously lying. So to all the listeners that are going to hear that, it is false news. He is a fan of my fashion. So yeah, everyone wants to dress like me. That's basically what I'm going to say.
You know, honestly, I forgot to bring that up actually, Tawanda. Before we do officially say our goodbyes, you can get your revenge on that. Who is the worst dressed in the Kent dressing room, in your opinion?
In all honesty, I think it's unfair to say people are the worst dressed because everyone has their vibes. So I'm not going to, I guess everyone like dresses their own way. Some people might be a fan of the way I dress. Some people might not be a fan of the way I dress. So I think it's unfair to say they're the worst dressed because they're happy with what they wear. So let them do their thing.
Well, there we go. I think that's a nice message, actually, to end today's episode of the podcast. You know, just as long as you have your own fashion sense, own it. That's the motto to take away from this episode of the County Cricket Podcast, along with many others. But Tawanda, I think that's a perfect place to wrap up today's episode of the podcast. And yeah, just again, thanks for coming on. Been an absolute pleasure. Always welcome back here on the County Cricket Podcast. So that's pretty much it from us too here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. Also, listeners, remember to subscribe to the podcast. Keep on downloading the episodes. Got plenty more content coming your way over the winter months. But yeah, that's just all of my plugging and promotion done for today's episode. So that's it from us two here at the podcast. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.